Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Well, I mean, I've got nothing to say.
I'll ignore those rude gestures. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Football Ramble. We're back once again, and I'm glad to be back. It's a new year, but we don't have a new team, unfortunately.
No, right, fortunately.
I'm sorry. Fortunately. My words mixed up yet again. Mm. Pete's here.
Hello.
James or Jim's here.
Hello.
Lukey's here.
All right.
We had an email from Brian Harrison, and he wanted to know what our favourite FA Cup upsets are.
Probably inspired by last weekend's events, no doubt.
Mm. Exactly. Yeah. After, of course, Leeds beat Manchester United at Old Trafford.
You go first, James.
Me? I'm actually going to go for a fairly recent one, which was last year. I'm going to go for Barnsley, when they beat Liverpool and then beat Chelsea.
Oh, so you've got two games.
I'm just going for that, as it's just an incredible doubleheader of genuine giant killings. It was brilliant. It was such a great result for them at Anfield. And then to just sort of grind it out against Chelsea as they did was just so impressive. And, yeah, fair play to them.
Yeah, good.
Well, that's a good one, yeah. Good start.
Who's the fellow that played for them and inspired them to that and now plays for Reading and he played against Liverpool at the weekend? Brian... Oh, what's his name?
Gunn.
No, it's not Brian Gunn. That guy was also good when he came on against Liverpool as well, so maybe it's in his bloodstream.
Mm. Giant killing.
Yeah, Luke.
I've got a feeling I'm going to be talking nonsense for the next hour.
Yeah, you've been on the show before.
Yeah, you are in the studio.
Would you be serving the listeners? Yeah. I'll go for... I'll be selfish for once. I'll go for. And I'm sort of belittling my team in a way because it's not. I mean, we're in the same division and that, but no one really expected
Manchester
to,
United, Portsmouth.
Yeah. No one expected Palmer to get anything out of that, and they
did
absolutely battered Manchester United for 90 minutes. No, obviously it was a bit of a lucky one, but that for me that is. Especially now in the sort of dire straits that Portsmouth are in, that was a real big sort of high point for me. And I knew when we won that game, I knew we'd go on and win it. I knew we had a really, really good chance.
So well, two championship sides left to beat then, yeah.
Well, and we beat them.
Yeah, so well, you can only beat what's been in front of you.
Exactly. And that
was one of the most one-sided games I've ever
Which is
seen.
What I say against, when we're playing for the Ramble team against listeners. Right, we're not listeners, eh? Sorry.
They will not have some of that.
Have respect, sorry.
You keep a civil tongue in your head.
So yeah, Manchester United 0, Portsmouth 1, 2008 FA Cup.
Rio Ferdinand ended up in goal.
He did, and let's face it, no matter who the teams are that are playing, everyone loves to see an outfield player for goal. Yeah, come on.
Do you remember when Vinnie Jones did that against Newcastle for Wimbledon? Newcastle beat them 6-1.
Oh, he had to go in goal.
But in Newcastle trivia, and Vinnie Jones had to go in goal.
He's a tall fella.
Steve Staunton always used to go and go for Liverpool. Yeah. And actually...
Dean Windass.
Yeah, Windass has done it. I'll tell you something, there's a fact that you may know, you may not know, that any team, and it happened at Sheffield United and it happens at Everton now, when Phil Jagielka's in the team,
yeah, that's
they
right,
never
yeah,
put
yeah.
a keeper on the bench because he's actually decent in goal.
He's decent in goal.
Yeah.
He loves stuff like that. That's what makes football good.
Yeah. I really do love the thought of, like, Rio... trying to organise a defence. That's
just the idea. Right, go left, stage left, your left. Oh,
wait, like, defend, yeah?
He went the right way against Montari's penalty, but it was too strong for him.
Yeah. He probably tried to mark one of the forwards.
Yeah. Or murk him.
Yeah.
Eh?
Yeah, good.
Peter.
Sorry, I was just sipping from my coffee.
Think it's American.
Not
it's
one.
American
thinks I thought that was tea.
No, it's coffee.
Okay.
It's delicious.
Yeah.
Not one that I should be happy with, I guess, but it's one that gets mentioned every time Newcastle play a slightly smaller team. Hereford, non-league Hereford against Newcastle.
Because yeah, they were slightly smaller than Newcastle. Right. That way, slightly smaller.
Well, they were first division. Hereford were non-league.
Newcastle have stumbled across a lot of lower leagues.
Yeah.
Stevenage Borough, they took a couple of goes out.
It's Ronnie Radford,
DJ Campbell.
Hang on, he hasn't finished.
Sorry, Pete.
Ronnie Radford scored from 30 yards.
Look at his face! Just look at his face!
Wonderful commentary, wonderful moment, wonderful
when Pinocchio was commentating for the BBC.
Wonderful tournament. The FA Cup.
All right.
It's a wonderful tournament.
I haven't done mine yet. I'm going to go back to the 70s, as my haircut would suggest. And the one I'm going for is from 1972, I think. It's when Little Leighton Orient came up against Chelsea. And Chelsea went 2-0 up, yeah. Gentlemen. Yeah, I mean, it's amazing. Like getting a bye. Mm. But the mighty O's came roaring back. And a beardy chap called Fairbrother, who looked like a farmer rather than a footballer. If you can,
I know how he feels.
Yeah, scored. And I think Barry Davis might have commentated. If he didn't, he did in my mind.
Yeah.
Fairbrother! Yes! It's like one of those ones.
Barry Davis commentates in your mind when you go to the shop and buy a pint of milk.
He's behind the counter.
Oh, and he's got the right change!
Does he buy a whisper?
£2.50. that's what I'm going for. I'd like to make and it's a near giant killing in 1975.
An honourable mention.
Yes, well, to be honest with you, it shouldn't really be mentioned because it's not a giant killing, but it nearly was. In 1975, when my local side Leatherhead nearly beat Leicester City. Now, Leatherhead were non-league, Leicester City were
non-league, and they got to the third round.
I believe so.
Yeah.
If my memory serves me correctly. And they were 2-0 up against Leicester, and Leicester managed to crawl back in 3-2.
And Leicester were in the top flight at the time.
They were up there.
That's massive. Banged a couple past Liverpool, didn't they?
Yeah, Anfield as well. Rocky Baptiste, I believe, was playing for them. He's a sort of veteran of these.
Now,
I saw
Rocky Baptiste score at Highbury.
For Farnborough.
I was in the Farnborough crowd.
Was it 5-1, was it?
It was 5-1. The Farnborough had a man sent off 20 minutes in. Come on, Rev. He was kind of last man, but it's just like, come on.
Yeah, he pulled a machete out, but come on.
One of the funniest things I've ever seen at a football match is they had a streaker, which is funny enough as it is. But they let him just kind of run around. They didn't rugby tackle him to the ground, and everyone was cheering. And he ran up to the goal where the Farnborough fans were, and he went to do a header to score. Everyone, right! And then as he was kind of led off into the corner, he started sort of pretending he was all embarrassed and covering his bits.
What? I don't think they get it when they do that. they always do that, streakers. It's like everyone's just seen you naked for ages. Yeah.
He doesn't like to get naked in front of less than 10,000 people.
No, fair enough.
Do you get so much of a ban if you're nude? Because you can run on the pitch with clothes, and I just sort of think that's hooliganism. But if you're a streaker...
Well, I think if you enter the field of play now, you get an immediate
ban. You're in real trouble.
Anyway,
I mean, in the past, that would have been a brilliant sort of... Well, I'd say disguise, but maybe it's not the right term, but,
Yeah. I think there's a guy who's now a professional streaker, isn't there? The guy who does all the events.
Yep.
And he became a...
Sickening.
Yeah, but he became a professional streaker when...
Nothing's pure anymore.
He popped up with, actual, company names written on him. Websites on him and stuff. He's done the Open, he's done the...
He's a weird fella, though, isn't he?
Wimbledon. He was at Wimbledon, only my balls will bounce or something.
Or new balls, please, or something, wasn't it?
Yeah.
And there's that fellow who dresses up like footballers, isn't he? Because he tried... He
looks
that a
bit like power.
I was talking about that today, actually.
He got in the Champions League final photo.
No, it wasn't the final.
Oh, it was not.
It was a group stage between Manchester United and Bayern Munich in Munich, and he stood on the end.
Carl Power, that guy's name.
I was in Munich. He went to Munich for that.
Commitment.
He's spent loads, though, isn't he?
But he's a bit of a weirdo, isn't he?
I think he's played for probably by mistake. I'm sure I've seen him filling in right back.
Isn't he Dindan?
Yeah, might be.
The points need to be given out, and I'm delighted to say that Pete Donaldson.
Oh, yeah. A vault fast for the Marcus.
Yeah. Now that's it. The Hereford, definitely.
Well done, Pete.
Some honourable mentions have got to go to Wrexham beating Arsenal.
Oh, yeah, Mickey Thomas.
The '90s. And, of course, Wimbledon actually winning it against Liverpool at Wembley.
Yeah. Points are done now, though, Jim.
I know. I'm just credit where it's due.
It's all in vain now, James. Yeah. You'll get your I Tried Hard sticker at the end of the show. Well, as mentioned previously, Manchester United did lose to Leeds United.
That is absolutely massive as well. I think this game is up there with a lot of the games we've just mentioned. Yeah. That's going to mean so much to Leeds.
They are two divisions below the champions... And last year's finalists of the European Champions League. Sorry, the Champions of England.
Yeah. And
incredible.
Well, and also, it was just a really, really poor performance from Manchester United. Yeah. And it was one of the few games where you hear people say, oh, yeah, well, there's a top four bias for the referees and stuff. There really was on that game. Rayner got all the decisions. Yeah. And Ferguson piped up with some ridiculous stuff at the end of the game about injury time again.
Well, he was moaning about injury time, and he said the referee gave 5 minutes, which I thought was too much. I was watching it.
Well, too much.
Yeah. Was good, yeah.
And he said, this is an insult to the game and the players out there.
What, he wanted more?
It's not really an insult, is it?
It's strange. I mean, how many subs were in the second half? Does anyone remember? Because it's 30 seconds per substitute.
Well, United brought one all three. Oh, sorry, Manchester United brought one all three.
But then there was one in injury time as well. But 5 minutes was plenty. It was plenty. And listen, Manchester United didn't lose that game because it was 5 minutes of injury time. Yeah. It was.
Oh, I don't know.
Michael Owen missed an absolute. Well, not a sitter, but, you know, he should at least have connected with the ball rather than his own ankle.
Scuffed it, didn't he? I think you could sort of tell the gulf between the two teams as well. I mean, the way that Leeds went about it, they were very workmanlike. And there was a lot of drop passes and stuff. Yeah. So you could tell that Leeds weren't a Premiership outfit.
From Wes Brown, who got absolutely terrorised.
I thought it was funny because I was watching it thinking, oh, yeah, Leeds have. You know, of course they're a big club, and I think, blimey, they are two divisions below.
Yeah. But they are a big club.
Of course they're a big club. That's not what I meant. You look at Leeds and they're playing at Old Trafford and you think they're back in the Premier League. I'm sure a lot of people thought that.
One thing that I didn't enjoy, I think I wrote on the Facebook wall, where it was just Snodgrass took the ball off Rooney, really cheekily sort of nipped it off his toe. And Rooney did that, you know, that horrible sight when Rooney gets the ball taken off him and he just starts legging out.
You know he's a foul someone.
And you know it's going to end with a foul. Yeah. He did it again and I was like, if he does that during the summer, we're going to be screwed. And he's still got it in
his
game.
He's got no discipline.
He did it against in the last one.
But why do it? It's an FA Cup rat against a League One bloody side.
He has got better at that, but he's still got a bit of that in him.
True.
I can't remember what he said it, but someone might have mentioned it to me. It annoyed me. It was Tilsley commentator, wasn't it?
Oh.
And he kept going, Leeds versus Manchester United, it's just like being back in the 70s. It's like, well, or 2002.
I think probably the highlight of the game was hearing Tilsley get just gradually more gutted as the minutes ebbed away. It was brilliant.
It's always nice. It's always nice to hear.
There was a great bit right at the end of the match. As the Leeds fans started celebrating, it cut to a man who clearly hadn't been swearing when the cameraman chose him. And it was a toothless man giving two fingers up to the pitch. And it made me think, isn't that just a metaphor for Leeds United? A toothless man swearing at the Premiership.
Fuck off. I thought Beckford played really, really well. Wes Brown was absolutely out of his depth against a League One striker. In fact, I think Beckford's probably a Championship standard striker.
Do you not think Wes Brown would therefore be equipped to deal with Adriano?
I think he's one of the worst footballers I've ever seen.
Perhaps not one on the plane then.
But when you couple that with the fact that Alex Ferguson used to pipe up and say, did we talk about this last week? The reason Manchester United didn't sign Rio Ferdinand the first time is because Alex Ferguson rated Wes Brown as better and said he was the best natural talent of a defender in the country.
We didn't mention that, but he definitely did say that. And also, he said before that if he hadn't had his injuries, he would have been an England regular for years and years and years. But, maybe he just had an off day. I mean, he's not always that bad.
Brown's awful. I used to be very critical, but I think he's put in some good performances in the last few years.
I think he's suffered from injuries, in fairness, and I think he's suffered from not playing consistently, but I still think he's a poor
defender. He just looked slow.
Beckford's
movement looked really, really good, and people sort of complain that he's a bit of an Andy Cole character. He takes a lot of chances.
That's what
to
people
score
say,
goal and stuff. And that's not something I'm particularly happy about Newcastle United being in the market for him, because he's just another shawler, I think.
I think he's a championship player.
He's certainly not a Premiership player.
I think it's funny, a lot of people saying, oh, Beckford, who's he? Do you think he'll get snapped up? Yeah. You think, what? He's 26, he's been around for a few years.
I think the thing is, the name Jermaine Beckford sounds like a Premier League striker's name.
He's banged goals in over the last couple of seasons, to be fair to him. But it's worth mentioning that with Wes Brown, though, is that he's not a young player anymore.
No.
Yeah, he's lost his pace. He's lost the pace he had. But what generally happens with defenders when they lose their pace, you see it with all these great Italian defenders over the years, they gain the experience, they gain the sort of savviness, and he's not gained that at all. He should be putting someone like Jermaine Bedford to bed.
Yeah,
you know,
totally.
And you know you can blame the injuries and the fact that he's not been playing consistently, but to me, you've got to look at it the other way as well. You've got to say, well, this is his chance to play. He's not playing often. He better put a good performance in so he can get his place back. Mm. And he's not done that. And he only played last minute because Vidic pulled out, didn't he? So maybe that affected him as well. Yeah. It's difficult to know what to do, but he looked terribly out of his depth for me.
Apparently there's a bit of a weird thing going on with Vidic, isn't there? When he said apparently he didn't play because something just didn't feel right in his body. And apparently Ferguson said, like, I couldn't tell you what's wrong with him, but it's all a bit frosty.
It's
apparently
he's unsettled. Man City.
I saw Fernando Torres in the stand and absolutely shit himself.
Arsenal, good win at West Ham.
Yeah,
turned it around, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it was impressive purely because, I mean, I said this when Arsenal won at Anfield, but I really, you know, this season, at the beginning and a lot of last season, you look at Arsenal, they don't look capable of turning games around, but they have changed that. There's a real steal there. And Abu Diaby and Sami Nasri coming on made such a difference, but previously they were players that might come off the bench and just, like, nothing would change. There seems to be a depth there and a sort of a belief, I think, Wenger would say, but it's actually real now and it seems to be going on, you know, on the pitch rather than just inside his head.
Which is always a bonus. Yeah.
It's very much
believe.
So.
You believe so many things.
I think that it was a good performance from Arsenal after they sort of decided to sort of turn it on a little bit. And Diamante's a super player for West Ham.
Yeah, absolutely. Like he did lose his head a bit towards the end.
Oh, he always does. That's why I love him.
But West Ham were brilliant, to be fair to them. And Valen Bourami as well.
He's a good player. He's so busy, Bourami. He's just what they needed to get him out of that sort of mess, if he can play consistently. The only sort of disappointment, really, for Arsenal's point of view was, okay, they didn't have a great first half, but the boy Wilshere didn't play very well.
Yeah, no.
And he sort of did. I think the occasion got to him a little bit.
Maybe.
And you don't expect. I don't know if it's whether we've been spoilt with young Arsenal players in the past, but you don't expect that to happen. And Aaron Ramsey really took the game by the scruff.
But Ramsey's had a lot more.
He has, no, he has.
He's played a lot more games than Wilshere as well. I mean, even from when he was at Cardiff. But, I mean, yeah, Wilshere is a sort of bright talent, but a lot of fans have been calling to see more of him. Obviously, it is a case that Wenger knows best again.
Yeah.
But, it, you know, it would be nice to see him play more, but I think he's sort of like. He's a sub on 75 minutes when you're 3-0 up at the moment.
Oh, of course, this is a bit of game experience. But he's going to turn 18 on New Year's Day or something. Yeah.
It might do him good to come on and to play and lose, I think.
Oh, of course, yeah. He'll learn a lot from playing, really, definitely. I can remember my first Premiership game, my first FA Cup tie, you know, it was always difficult.
Oh, Souness signed you, didn't he?
You didn't learn from it, though.
No.
And Liverpool aren't learning at the moment, are they? 1-1 away to Reading.
They could have easily gone.
Reading are 20th in the Championship.
Yeah.
It's a weird one, and that's why the FA Cup is a really interesting tournament to watch. If you forget all the cliches that people spout all the time, it genuinely is.
Are you suggesting that the magic? Yeah. He's still there, Luke.
Yeah, I am.
Good.
I am. I think it's magic. Tell you what, it couldn't be more magic in that game if Paul Daniels came on the pitch at half time and did one of those tricks. Yeah. I thought Liverpool were staring down the barrel of going out. I couldn't see him getting anything out of the game, but luckily they'll do a job at Anfield. But Dirk Kuyt was brilliant.
That was superb. You don't see that very often. That goal was entirely down to him.
Because if he had been offside, it would have been a dodgy one, but obviously he managed to stay on. So
the side who went through from the third round, perhaps most emphatically, were Preston beating Colchester 7-0. Norberto Solano might not have enjoyed watching that, assuming that he did.
Yeah. Do you know John Parkin got a hat-trick in that game?
Fantastic.
Beardy, large John Parkin.
Just like me, isn't he?
Yeah. Old-school, fat footballer.
He's just like me, but decent at football.
That is the magic of the cup right there.
I'll tell you, Pompey were unlucky in fairness. I do bash Pompey quite a lot, but they are unlucky against Coventry.
1-1 with Coventry.
Yeah, they had
and
a lot
that
of
was in Portsmouth.
Yeah, it was, yeah.
Do you fancy them to go
frustrating,
to
surely, as it's another game.
I'll never fancy them.
No.
Yeah, it's not these days. I mean, it's a sort of fixture away at the Rico that Pompey will slip up at. It's interesting, that's the first time they've not won after not being paid. It seems to work as an interesting motivational tool, not playing the players.
It's the future. Stop paying footballers.
My mum walked past. I was talking to her about football. I was at my mum's at the weekend. And she went, "Well, they should only get paid if they win anyway."
My dad's like that.
Sep, is that you?
well, for that amount of money, you should be able to just bloody score from anywhere. Yeah, but that bloke defending is getting paid quite a lot as well, Dad. Yeah. So sure.
And money is no substitute for the basic laws of physics.
Paul Jules certainly very happy that that's not the case. Middlesbrough lost to Manchester City at home.
Shock result there.
Borough are having a little bit of a bad time.
Bit of a wobble.
They're 11th on 32 points, and they're 5 points off the playoffs.
They were right at the top when Strachan took over. Yeah. So
well, that's right. They've only collected 2 points from Strachan's first four games in charge.
Whoever the manager coming in is, it's always a risk to change a manager at that stage of the season, especially when you're doing well.
1 point off the top.
Yeah, I do think Strachan's decent. I think he's all right. So I think he'll probably turn it around. But, I mean, the problem is with that division, it's such a difficult division to get out of anyway, as we say all the time.
Yeah.
So if you slip up and you start falling away, it's very difficult to get back up there again because everyone takes points off each other, do you know what I mean?
It's like that bit in Gladiators at the end where you've got to run up
Travelator.
A treadmill.
It's
a Travelator, yeah.
Yeah, it really is.
Yeah.
They should call it that instead of the championship.
It is
championship.
Like that.
It's rubbish.
Coca-Cola
Travelator from now on. You can have that idea for free.
The biggest deficit I saw in Gladiators was this massive tonk guy, and he had an 18-second head start or something, because normally it was only about a 5-second head start.
Well, it's half a second per point.
Exactly, and he roasted it. He was, like, bigger than most of the gladiators. He was hammering them, and he got to the Travelator.
Couldn't do it.
He couldn't do it.
No.
I think I remember that.
He had about three goes, and the other guy nipped him.
But the crowd giving him it as well.
His daughter was crying.
The worst thing about football in this day and age is I wouldn't put it past some decision maker to name a league the Travelator. I think that could happen.
Celtic 1, Rangers 1. Bloody good point for Rangers. Even Walter Smith said that they didn't deserve it.
It's
quite something coming.
They conceded and then scored pretty much straight away, didn't they?
Well, they conceded on 79 and then equalised on 81, I think with their only shot on target. The whole game, Celtic absolutely pummeled them.
I know the Rangers keeper made a couple of worlders, didn't they?
Yeah, so Rangers keeping a bit of distance from Celtic. I think they're 7 points in front now. So
sad.
It was only recently we were talking about how close SPL is.
Exactly.
That's
it's really.
Yeah, but it's lasted.
Evens itself out.
It lasted longer than what I thought. But I think
that's why they should adopt a South American model, Marcus. Mm. Have two championships a season, as you rightly said.
Well, as a friend of mine said.
Well, I think it's only fair you take credit.
But if you're putting it in good light and want to give me the credit, then that's absolutely fine.
Well, I reckon that Boyd's going to go in January anyway, so that might...
Where's he going to go?
Off.
I'd like to see how he's doing in the Premiership.
He might go to Newcastle, look, that's where he might go.
Well, he's got the record now. He's ahead of Henrik Larsson with goals in the league. It's incredible.
I'd like to see how he fares in the Premier League.
Would you?
Because he's a goal machine at that level, and you just never know.
Yeah, I'm not going to tell you Scottish football.
Birmingham.
Yeah, we'll go somewhere like that. Yeah. Well, but Alex McLeish's done a fantastic job down there.
Fantastic job.
Him and Chucho up front, prolific.
Yeah. Hey? Speaking of prolific goal scorers, Francesco Totti is apparently prepared to come out of international retirement.
Oh, how very good of him!
Exactly.
Prepared.
Yeah. Yeah. He says, "I will decide in April." If Marcello Lippi calls me up, if I am fit, and if the group wants me, I will go.
Do you think this was his plan all along, miss that qualifying?
It's really harsh.
We'll get rid of qualifying, we'll get rid of all the pre-tournament friendlies and all that business. Call me when the lights are on. It's like zebra.
I think it's harsh. I mean, obviously the manager's priority is to pick his best players. I think we understand that. But if you look at the players that the strikers at Italy have used to get them into the World Cup in the first place, Rossi and Iaquinta and Di Natale and Giardino.
It's terribly unfair.
You can't just bomb one of them off.
Luke, you're a notable Ronaldo, Brazilian Ronaldo advocate.
I am. Yeah, absolutely.
You can't.
It's double standards, Pete. I don't care.
And I'll tell you something. If Roger Miller fancies it,
the only difference
being Pete, you should be worried.
Pete, Ronaldo's never said he's not playing for Brazil anymore. He just said, "Pick me if you want."
And that's very true.
Totti's actually said, "I'm retired from Italian football, from world international football." He did it after the World Cup.
And
I don't think it's fair for him to come along and just go, "All right, yeah, I fancy a bit of this now." I want to be captain and I want free kicks and penalties as well. You know what I mean? Where will it end, Pete? Hey,
hang on a minute. He says he'll decide in April.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay, so.
Hello, is that Giuseppe Rossi? Yeah, it's Francesco Totti, yeah. You know you've got your suitcase packed and everything? Forget it.
You're a young lad, don't worry about it. You'll have other opportunities.
Yeah.
And he will do.
When Totti's dead.
Yeah. But tell you what, he's going to be pairing up with Luca Toni, isn't he, at Roma? Were you just about to say that?
I was moving on to that.
So they could put up a prolific sort of partnership at Roma for the last few months.
I'll do the links.
All right. And they could both get in.
Do you know what's quite something? Is that Luca Toni
is that right?
Is going to Roma, and I think they're going to link up.
And is he looking to build on his amazing performance at Euro 2008? The World Cup 2010 Golden Boot.
He's got a World Cup winners' medal.
Yeah, it's true, yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
So, yeah, Luca Toni is going to Roma. He's only on loan for the rest of the season. Because he was out of favour.
He had a bust up with Van Gaal, didn't he?
Well, he said that I have a splendid relation with the Bayern directors.
He's my cousin.
Who understood my desire to come to Roma. I had problems with Van Gaal, but anyway, that's in the past and I don't want to talk about it anymore. I'll talk about it again in June if I'm still at Roma. So he'll start slagging him off if he doesn't have to go back.
I really, really want him to stay there now. I want to see what's going on. Louis Van Gaal, like... He just looks like a man who'd have a go at you.
Looks like a pig.
Don't be out of order.
He does. He's a fantastic manager. Yeah. Well, he's not at the moment, but...
Yeah, they're not doing that well.
Well, actually, they are third in the league. It's very, very tight in Germany. Yeah. I can't stress that enough.
It always seems to be, though.
Hang on, 11 points separate first and 10th in Germany.
Wow.
The top five is separated by 5 points.
Can I talk about another striker playing in Italy?
Please do.
Goran Pandev.
Yeah, he's just moved.
Yeah, he finally managed to get out of being bullied to within an inch of his life by Lazio.
Yeah.
And who wouldn't let him... Well, he said he wanted to move in the summer. And he wasn't going to sign a new contract.
That's right.
Rather than sort of either getting some cash for him or giving him a new contract, bunged him in the reserves.
They did, yeah.
And they wouldn't let him leave.
It's shocking.
He got a decision. He got like a load of... I got about €100,000 in compensation, and now he's obviously moved on.
To Inter.
But, I think he's a good player, Goran Pandev, and I think he's definitely the best Macedonian footballer I know. Without a shadow of a doubt. Who else? Go on.
Darko...
Pandev?
Yeah.
He was Yugoslavia, and he's retired about 20 years ago.
He's actually from Macedonia.
Yeah, but he retired ages ago.
Well, he's from Macedonia, though.
Geeks.
Thank you, Lauro. Turkish side and Karagucu.
Well done. First time, I can confirm.
I eased up and took it.
You've been on the train, he wouldn't talk to me all the way up. Just saying it over and over
and
again.
Karagucu.
That's because I couldn't get a word in.
Yeah, we'll get some Turkish listener saying that you're pronouncing it wrong anyway.
Turkish side and Karagucu are claiming to have completed the signing of Newcastle and Cameroonian midfielder Jeremy.
I thought they were skint.
Thank Christ for that. he was on $60,000 at Newcastle.
That's outrageous.
$60,000 in the championship.
An hour.
I thought they didn't have any cat. I thought because obviously Darius Vassell's there.
Didn't he get evicted from his hotel?
Yeah. You know, he's got a like a blog sort of website thing.
Vassell.
Yeah, he's kind of it's like his own kind of Twittery sort of thing. He did a little few updates on there and the competitions.
Mm. Oh, right. There's a lot of football on Twitter. Apparently, Freddie Adu's been talking about his move.
I follow Darren Bent on Twitter. He's very entertaining.
Yeah, I do enjoy
Darren Bent actually had the T logo from Twitter stitched into his boots one week.
And really? It, with DB10 The Truth written on them, wasn't it?
Yeah.
I like that fake Ray Parler. I like him.
Yeah, he's class.
He sometimes pops up with, so what are your tips for 2010 musically? And he wants to say, I'm addicted to the XX. Oh, yeah.
And Kai Rooney's got a little Twitter account as well, hasn't he? Wayne Rooney's son.
Oh,
it's not really him.
No, I know.
It's a picture of Shrek.
I'm pretty sure the Jack Warner one's real.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah.
Yeah, if you're not following the Jack Warner one, it's a genuine great piece of work.
I haven't got any money yet. I'm tweeting, but I'm not getting paid.
Former referee Graham Pohl has been saying recently that the number of referees officiating in the Premier League is not healthy. That's what
I think he makes a fair point.
Are there enough yellow cards? Hopefully. Well, I think referees are under so much pressure with fitness and they get complained about all the time that maybe it's not easy to find ones that are up to the standards that they need.
But they rest them quite a lot, don't they?
If they get in trouble,
if they get in trouble for whatever reason, they chuck them down a step and they don't get the big games. But then some of them just slip out completely into the championship and it just...
But the problem isn't that they're refereeing too many games, I think the problem is they're refereeing the same teams too often.
Right. Yeah.
So, which is obviously a bit of a dangerous...
Well, that's what Paul was saying. He was saying that they can sometimes ref the same team 7 or 8 times a season.
Can you remember when, I can't remember the referee, Mike Dean, I think it was, when he played the advantage for a Liverpool goal and they scored and he started celebrating. But he was celebrating because he played the advantage because he was really pleased with himself. But everyone was, hang on a minute. I think it was Liverpool against Sunderland, mate.
Rightfully so.
He started pumping his fist when Liverpool scored.
Well, wasn't there a referee, I can't remember what, I just remember seeing a clip at the end of an FA Cup final. He sank to his knees. Went, yes! 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 Do you remember? I can't remember who it was against. It just really sticks in my mind. Just like
that's what, because he was so pleased that he'd refereed the FA Cup final.
No, no, I think it just got through it. I think he clearly supported one of the teams.
That's outrageous.
No, I can't. Surely he got through it without.
Because I know that Rob Stiles never refereed Pompey games because that's where he's from. Mm. He's from. I've seen Rob Stiles out on like a Christmas night out in Pompey.
Remember the referee before the Barcelona Arsenal Champions League final? Was pictured with a Barcelona kit on, holding a Barcelona kit. He was taken off.
Meshkayan Club.
Exactly. Mm. He was taken away.
Do you think referees have to actually sort of declare who they support when?
I don't think they do.
When
they've got
start their careers.
Well, where they're from, I think. Would.
One to ask Jeff Winter.
Yeah.
Sure. Jeff.
Let's not ask Jeff Winter anything ever again. People, anyone out there who's like got in the broadcast sort of industry, don't ask Jeff Winter anything ever again. And then he'll never be on the telly again.
And yet, at the same time, you should visit Jeff Winter, like mediaentertainment.com or whatever he's called his website, because it is fucking hilarious.
But do it through a proxy so he doesn't get the hits.
Yeah. It's a fair plea. Graham Pobb was also saying that he was saying that refs need to be stronger with their decisions and one thing another, not be bullied.
It's a really, really difficult job.
Well, yeah, good. He said that Mike Riley, who heads up the association, he reports into a board which is, Graham Pohl was saying, is basically run by the Premier League. So it's the clubs themselves, as he puts it, who are dictating policy as opposed to the laws of the game.
So there you go, Ferguson. It's your own problem. Sort it out.
Well, the issue is also that, you know, if you take it, if you strip it down to its bare essentials, you're effectively in charge of 22 men, all who get paid loads more than you, all are universally loved by thousands and thousands of people who are at the same place. So it's never going to please everyone all the time.
And nobody knows the names of any linesmen, put it that way. They're the ones that
I heard that. I heard that Liverpool Reading game when the linesman gave the correct decision for Dirk Kuyt to not be offside. Mm. And the commentator, I forget who it was, even the commentator went, oh, and you've got to give credit to Chris Davidson there.
Chris Lynor.
Yeah. You've got to give credit to Johnny Flags there.
Johnny Flags.
On the subject of Mike Riley, I just want to point out that he looks a lot like one of the vultures from the Disney Robin Hood.
Yeah, he does. I mean, that's a good point.
That's a wonderful
point. Well, I'm glad I made it.
Yeah.
Good. And so are we.
Right! Emails.
That was the worst.
That's my Roy Walker.
The worst Roy Walker.
No.
That I've ever heard.
I can do a worse one.
Go on.
I can only do two impressions. I can only do Dave from Gavin and Stacey and Louis Armstrong. So only two I can do.
Which one's Dave?
Well, we can all do Louis Armstrong. Uh-oh.
Oh, I like Ness. That guy.
Isn't that just a Welsh man?
Yes. Yeah. Yes, it is.
Yeah. Good lad. Good
we can all do Louis Armstrong, can we? Go on, do a Louis Armstrong then, Marcus.
We have all...
Rob, that's awful!
The time...
I think you meant to be doing this.
We have all...
Oh, that's
the that's in Bill, the world.
That's Bill Cosby.
Three of us can do it.
That's Bill Cosby doing Louis Armstrong.
Bill Cosby. Jell-O pudding.
Great man. Yeah. Well, that's not Bill Cosby.
That is, you should advertise Jell-O pudding.
Jell-O pudding! With the hippin' and the hoppin'.
Let's do emails.
Yeah.
Emails.
Well, I don't have an email to read out. You three do.
Oh, got it.
One of you's going first.
Who's it going to be?
Delegate, Marcus. James, make a decision.
James is going first.
Hello, hello, Ramblers.
Hello.
Doing my rounds this morning in the supermarket, getting everything looking spick and span, I saw something that caught my eye. I assume he works in a supermarket.
Yeah, he's doing it.
Yeah. For his own sake, I hope that's the truth. The object in question was a tin of Café Pelé, freeze-dried champion. On the tin is a picture of Pelé celebrating a goal, and it claims it contained quality coffee. Has Pelé lost his mind?
Is he saying... I would.
Probably, yes. Has he sullied his great name by putting his face on a tin of coffee that may or may not be quality? Will we see Maradona counter that by putting his face on a packet of condoms? I've lost faith in old school football a bit after this. Oh, and don't get too upset about this. Australian cricketer Mike Hussey was marketing Bic pens in the same aisle. What a world we live in. Cheers, lads. That's Matt from Brisbane in Australia. Now, Matt, Pelé will put his name on anything. He's been hawking all kinds of things.
Have you just
including,
got
yeah, including Viagra for many, many years.
I've got one thing to add to that, and that's that I think that Maradona would probably prefer bareback. I think we can all agree on that. Maradona's definitely not a condom man.
It would be the contraceptive pill he would be advertising.
Yeah.
Oh, you would.
Thanks for that, Matt.
The hand job of God.
All the way from Brisbane, Australia as well. Good man.
Pete, you've got the next one.
This is referring to our kind of call to arms, because you looked for a goalkeeper last week,
yeah,
weren't we? Have we found one yet?
Yeah, we got one.
What's his name?
Tom Mortimer. He's only 17. I've got his number and everything. He's definitely coming.
And he's ex-Derby, is he?
He's ex-Derby County, yeah.
Academy.
Yeah, Academy.
That's still.
Yeah.
Come and have a kick.
He's picked himself up.
Come and have a kick.
Yeah, yeah. You're in, though, Tom. And I shall be calling you this week.
Good lad. How tall is he?
It'll be like a withheld number.
7'6".
Is he as good as Phil Jagielka? That's all I don't know.
Equally as good.
Well, this one is from a young man by the name of Ali Dyer.
Oh, really?
Hello, Ramble Force. Ho, your last podcast says you were looking for a goalie for your 11-a-side team. Well, I'm your man. I'm not really a keeper, but I'll give it a go. Here's my CV. I have experience playing in both France and Germany. I also may have represented my country 13 times. I come highly recommended by a former World Player of the Year and Hall of Famer, George Weah.
Is that
who is my cousin? That's his cousin. Grim Sinis also speaks good of me playing in place of Matt Letizia once. if you want me, give me a call or email Ali Dyer Saints Legend. Thank you very much, Ali Dyer.
I don't believe that's really him.
Given that his email address isn't alidyer@hotmail.com or anything, I don't think it is him.
For those who don't know, Google.
Thanks, Ali. We'll put you on the bench at some stage.
Lukey Moore, you've got the next one.
The reason we're not having Ali Dyer is because apparently he's a bit Ibrahimovic when it comes to trials. He don't do trials.
he
is Ali.
Luke, you got one.
Right. Hi, Luke. This is from a guy called Tom Penn. Hi, Luke. I thought as you promised to read another one of my emails, I would try and make it a good one. Remember Sasa Churchich?
Yeah.
Now, Tom is a guy who a number of weeks ago we read his email out, but I very unprofessionally forgot to mention his name. So
if to forget something.
Tom Penn. Done it this time.
As a Crystal fan, weird then.
Yeah,
Sean Penn.
Tom Penn. As a Crystal Palace fan, I have fond memories of Sasa Churchich. Not only his amazing skills and technique, but also the fact that he was a complete nutcase. I remember him once diving to win a penalty against Watford at home. A couple of minutes later, he went to take a throw in right in front of the away supporters, who were obviously giving him some abuse. His response was to start doing keepy ups and other tricks right in front of them with a stupid grin on his face, until the referee had to come over and tell him to hurry up with the throwing. I can also remember him taking part in a one-man protest at another home game in 1999, which involved him doing a lap around the pitch with a Yugoslav flag around his shoulders, protesting the NATO bombing campaign taking place at the time. He left Palace after having some fitness and attitude problems, in quotes, and after a brief spell in the MLS and at Motherwell, he announced his retirement from the game in 2001, aged just
29,
with the following statement. I would not sign for another club, even if I was offered $15 million. However, it would be different if they were to instead offer me 15 different women from all around the world. I would tell the club chairman, please let me make these women happy. I will satisfy them like they've never been satisfied before.
That's not a contract.
Him and Cassano should have a TV show together. I smell a sitcom. In 2007, Churchich appeared with the Serbian version of Celebrity Big Brother and won it. Yeah, he's a winner. He's a born winner. This led to a string of appearances on various other reality shows, including the Serbian version of The Farm in 2009,
where he may
or may not have wanked off a pig, like that girl did. Rumours have been circulating that he has been approached by Channel 4 with a view to appearing in the UK version of Celebrity Big Brother in 2010. Yeah, rumours by you, Tom. That's already happened now. Anyway, Merry Christmas, Happy New Year, and ho! That's brilliant, Tom. Thanks a lot.
I can exclusively reveal that he didn't wank off one pig. He wanked off 15 pigs.
Did he?
They were satisfied pigs.
Never been satisfied before.
Yeah. That's great stuff.
So, Marcus, who's going to get the goodie bag? The Championship Manager goodie bag?
Tom Penn.
The man who did the research. The good news is, Tom, you've won the Championship Manager goodie bag. The bad news is we really do expect you to pass it on to Sasa Churchich. So, please make sure you do that.
Hello, I'm Dean Windass, and this is my Hall of Fame.
Thank you very much. It's profile time.
It's Dean Windass's Herald.
Yeah. Isn't it just, James? Isn't it just? This week, we have a different profile, a different type of profile than we've had before. We've got a match.
Ooh.
It's the 1950 World Cup final.
Interesting, Marcus. Please tell us more.
This happened on the 16th of July, 1950.
17 years before.
Summer of Love.
Wasn't actually the final, though, was it, Marcus? I hope you're going to point that out in a minute.
Well, all right. Good.
Just checking you on your toes.
All right.
Quick game's a good game, isn't it?
This is the present. 1950 World Cup was held in Brazil, and the final was held in Rio in the very famous Maracanã Stadium.
Newly built especially for it.
It was indeed. It was indeed. And this was the first World Cup since the end of the Second World War. And as you say, Luke, Brazil and Uruguay, it was the last game of the tournament. However, to call it a final, as we know,
is perhaps incorrect.
Because the way they did it back then is there was no knockout round once you got through the first group stage. It was kind of... because 13 teams signed up for this World Cup. The World Cup was done vastly differently.
They loved a round robin then, didn't they? Mm.
They did love a little round robin.
Weird phrase that. It makes me think of smug families sending out Christmas letters about what they've been doing and what they've achieved through the year.
It makes me think of the Jackson 5 round robin.
Yeah, that as well.
Yeah.
But the second group stage, it was comprised of one group, which was the winners from the groups of the first stage. Mm. So the final, the 1950 World Cup final, as many people may know it, was actually the final group game. But it just so happened to work out that it was between Brazil and Uruguay, and they were the only ones who could win it. Which is why, when people say Brazil only needed a draw to win it, well, they did, because that would have they would have finished top of the group.
Yeah.
As I said, it was the first World Cup since the Second World War. Interestingly enough, throughout the Second World War, the Jules Rimet Trophy was hidden in a shoebox under the bed of the Italian FIFA vice president, Dr. Ottorino Barassi.
Imagine giving that to Jack Warner.
He's got the original one.
I was going to say the current one is under his bed.
My other fact about the Jules Rimet Trophy is, you know, that Brazil got given to keep.
Yes, they did.
Yeah, because they won it three times. Yeah. I read that they just had it in like a shabby old cabinet on the wall at the Brazilian Football Federation. It just got nicked.
It got nicked.
Yeah. It just got stolen. Yeah, that was that. No, I ever saw it again.
No, that's not true, because I saw the real one in the American Odds.
Did you?
No, that's not true. No pickles bailing them out.
No. Apparently, it was like they reckon it was immediately melted down for gold, and then they sold it.
Well, James says that when England won it, of course, it was famously stolen, and Pickles the dog found it. In honour of hosting this first competition since 1938, so only 13 teams entered. Brazil erected the largest stadium in the world, which was in Rio, and it was designed to hold 200,000 people. And the official attendance of the game was 173,000 or 174,000. But there's a lot of people say that was like 205,000, 210,000, you know. So they reckon it was 174,000 paying customers.
Yeah.
and their friends. So as we say, the setup of the finals was slightly different to what we know now, and actually what was before it. But into the final match it went. It was Brazil versus Uruguay. And Brazil only needing a draw to lift the trophy for the first time. Uruguay had previously won the World Cup in 1930. And Brazil were on top form coming into this match. They had scored 13 goals in their previous two pool matches. Uruguay had only scored five times and struggled on both occasions. Brazil clear favourites to win. I mean, clear favourites.
Yeah.
And, you know, Brazil was football mental then.
Yeah, it always has been. Yeah,
absolutely. Yeah, yeah, yeah. And Brazil's two games in that pool, they beat Sweden 7-1 and they beat Spain 6-1. So they were top with 4 points, because it was 2 points for a win going into the final match. Uruguay, however, were in second place. They drew 2-2 with Spain and beat Sweden 3-2 and scored the winner 5 minutes from time. So you can imagine how confident the Brazilians were. And in front of their own fans. That would have been... It's not as if, you know, Uruguay would have been allocated 20,000 to that, you know.
Yeah. No, and also there was like... it was almost like that. I've read quite a bit about the events surrounding it, and there was, you know, they were as close as you could. I mean, you can imagine they were as close to you could get. We're celebrating.
Yeah.
But, I mean, it was like there was newspaper articles the day before saying, like, you know, the new world champions or something, before the game had even been played.
They really did assume they'd already won.
The mayor of Rio proclaimed Brazil world champions prior to kickoff.
Yeah.
So the whole country was gripped with football fever. And as I say, you know, there was over 200,000 of them in the stadium supporting
that. That's some atmosphere, that is. That's over double the amount of people when we went to the Nou Camp. Yeah. Which was a ridiculous atmosphere.
That stadium must have covered a city.
Well, I mean, that's more people than most towns.
It's more people than the entire population of Portsmouth.
Is that right?
Yeah.
Giddy aunt. So anyway, before the match, in Uruguay's dressing room, their coach, Juan Lopez, he informed their team, he said, the best chance of surviving the powerful offensive line of Brazil would be to adopt a more defensive strategy. And he left the room, and the captain of the side, Varela, he stood up and addressed the team himself, saying, Juancito is a good man, but today he is wrong. If we play defensively against Brazil, our fate will be no different from Spain or Sweden's.
Yeah. He said there is basically, if we sit back, we're going to get murdered, gents.
Yeah. Yeah. He did. And so he said, he apparently delivered a real emotional and rousing speech.
Could you call it Churchillian, Marcus?
I would absolutely, and Hollywood-esque. And apparently this speech got them up for it so much. Like, all the players said that it was such an important thing. Mm. And he delivered, apparently it was a memorable line now. He said, muchachos, los de afuera son de palo que comencia la función.
Yeah.
Which I'm sure you're all aware of. Means, boys, outsiders don't play. Let the show begin.
Oh, that's big.
It's massive. Yeah. Can you imagine that?
Yeah, they're sitting
in this room with 200,000 people outside all singing for the other side.
I just think it's disappointing from Varela, to be honest. I think he went against his manager's wishes. I think he should be shipped out.
Two weeks, never
play again.
2 weeks, fine. 2 weeks' wages, fine. Yeah. Well, Graham Souness would not stand for that.
He wouldn't do. Well, the game started as most people would have thought, with Brazil piling on the pressure. However, Uruguay managed to get to half-time and it was 0-0. Brazil took an expected lead after half-time. Friaca, on 47 minutes, put them one up. And blimey, it was party time.
Yeah.
Not only were they already thought they'd won, but they were goal up.
No, it was official.
It pretty much was, yeah. I mean, you might as well have walked off the pitch, as far as I'm concerned. So the whole stadium's absolutely rocking. But Varela, the Uruguayan captain, suddenly he came into his own. He disputed the validity of the goal to the referee, and he really argued with the referee about that. But I think that was more a psychological kind of thing he was doing there. And apparently, he calmed down, he took the ball to the centre of the field, turned around and shouted to his team, now, it's time to win.
This guy's amazing.
Yeah, that's a class, isn't it? They equalised in the 66th minute when Alcides Gigia beat his man down the right, because he was their right winger. Talented right winger.
He's absolutely mustard, Gigia.
Yeah. He centred for Schiaffino to score, and then with 11 minutes remaining came the moment, which is in the football history book.
Which the moment which absolutely destroyed Brazil as a nation. Not just a football nation, but as a nation.
Well,
for years.
Gigia, he burst past his man down the right, and he shot near post against the goalkeeper, Barbosa, and it went in. Yeah. Absolutely unthinkable. And the crowd, from that moment, were silent.
Everyone mentions this when talking about this game. All the reports from people that were there. Apparently, imagine a crowd of 200,000 people that have just been partying, going mental, just suddenly being just silent.
Yeah. Well, Jules Rimet himself was at the game, and he described it. He said the silence was morbid, sometimes too difficult to bear.
Creepy.
There's a few little pockets of Uruguayans around, just going, Would you dare?
Completely getting your pocket picked and just sort of... it's like looking out into your garden, seeing someone messing around with your shed. You go, what are they doing?
Yeah, what's happening?
He's not supposed to be there.
It absolutely decimated Brazil. I mean, the famous fact is that there's something like 10 times the amount of books written about that final they lost than there is about the 1970 winning final. Mm. Yeah.
Well, there were suicides and things, weren't there?
Oh, yeah, it was incredible.
Yeah. Well, Jules Rimet himself, as I said, was there. The guy who obviously was the mastermind behind the World Cup. And he had prepared a speech in Portuguese to congratulate the winners because he thought he was going to be Brazil.
What a waste of time. What have I done?
Well, I would do it anyway, but no one's going to understand it now.
He was French, not Cockney.
Yeah.
But his
dad was a Cockney.
But of course, this wasn't the case. And the organisers of the World Cup, they didn't have a ceremony. The whole ceremony was prepared for around Brazil. So a ceremony did not take place.
That's what you need for motivation of your Uruguay.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah.
Although then, when it comes to actually winning it, you'd be proper pissed off if you weren't too giddy from just winning the World Cup.
No, we've won a football trophy as a Ramble team together.
Yeah.
And I'm sure,
comparable.
Well, if I may, because... and I'm sure a lot of the listeners maybe won medals and so on. The ceremony for this World Cup final match was quite similar to what I'm sure we've all experienced after winning something like that. It ended up with Jules Rimet himself, with the trophy named after him, walking round the pitch, shouting after the Uruguayan captain so he could give him the trophy.
World Cup final.
That's amazing.
In the stadium of 200,000.
That's crazy. Well, I don't think there was many of them left at that point.
Well, very true. Well, actually, to be fair to the crowd, I think they did actually give him a round of applause. They were gracious in defeat.
Okay.
Yeah. So, yeah, and the Brazilian Football Confederation had made 22 gold medals with the names of the players imprinted on them, so they had to get rid of them. Mm. And at that time,
the
FIFA...
Arrogant. I mean, it's a football match. Yeah, these things happen.
Yeah. But the thing is, though, the reason why I think it just destroyed Brazil so much and they took it so seriously is a lot of people tell you there's never been a war in Brazil. They've never actually had...
Oh, well, this is it, yeah. Psychologically, it's a massive, massive thing. Yeah.
Yeah, this was a national tragedy.
Anyone who thinks that... English people are passionate about football needs to look at Brazil, because everything they do is channeled through their football team. Like you were saying to me the other day, Marcus, like football in Brazil is split into two sort of eras. Not when they won the World Cup five times, before that and after. It's when that 1950 final, before that and after that.
It's like BC and AD.
Yeah, it's absolutely huge. And the goalkeeper, Barbosa, who, if you actually look at the goal, hopefully we can find it on YouTube and stick it up, it wasn't really even his fault. It was a good goal.
It was near post, but he was pretty inside the box.
Yeah, I mean, let's not forget, by the way, Barbosa was probably arguably the best keeper in the world at the time.
Yeah.
He was a brilliant keeper. I think he was at Vasco when he went that World Cup. He famously used to not wear any gloves, even though gloves had just been introduced sort of here and there, because he wanted to feel the ball. And he was a real footballer's goalkeeper. Mm. And he kept him in so many games. And he got completely crucified and actually died like a really unhappy man. And there's a famous quote from him, which was something like, in Brazil, the maximum jail sentence you can get is 30 years, but I've served 50 years already for that.
For something I've not been responsible.
Exactly. And they send him the goalpost when they replaced him and stuff?
They did, yeah.
They set him the goalpost, which I think he ended up burning with a firewood and stuff to try and cleanse his spirit, and because they're quite superstitious about that sort of thing as well as some Brazilians.
Incredible. I mean, there was a song, like a victory song composed several days before the final, and the song was never performed.
Yeah.
The society was in absolute despair. And a lot of the newspapers, they refused to accept it. And as you said earlier, James, there were suicides and stuff over this. Some of the players kind of went silently into retirement, and of course the example of Barbosa was all there to be seen. But Brazil decided to change the design of their national football kit after this defeat, because they thought it was considered to be jinxed. The Brazil home shirt was white with a blue neckline along with white shorts, and they changed this to what they have now with the yellow and the green.
Incredible, isn't it? I mean, obviously this marked a massive, massive sea change in Brazilian football, and obviously their sort of mentality towards it. And it's absolutely incredible that one single event was such a sort of cataclysmic, seismic event for them.
Yeah.
It's not as well known as you'd think that this ever happened.
I've got another thing, another little fact about it which puts it into perspective, is that you can get edited versions of that final on the black market in Brazil, which show Brazil actually winning. And it's cut with different footage of them celebrating different games. And they've cut it in a way, the film, on old cine film, they've cut it so it looks like Brazil have won. So you can buy, or there's people who've got them, who've edited themselves, a little bit of a sort of subculture of it, and you can get it and you can watch it.
It's just utterly, utterly pointless.
So you can sort of, you can imagine that Brazil have won the World Cup final in 1950, when they haven't.
If there are any listeners with lots of time on their hands, and I've met some of you, and there definitely are, right, can you do an England World Cup history where we win all of them?
Yeah.
Can you do a Portsmouth League win?
Not enough.
Cheapened it, he has.
Not enough wins. Well,
that's measure of how seriously they took it, you know.
Very much so. Another thing about the final was it boasted a record that it was the referee of the final was by far the oldest referee ever to officiate in a World Cup final. George Reader from Warwickshire.
Oh, yeah.
He started refereeing in 1930, and he'd retired from top-flight refereeing in 1944. But he was in such demand amongst foreign football associations that he was selected to officiate throughout Europe. Now, despite reservations about his age, Reader's international experience had placed him among those in the Football Association to call on for the tournament. And his powers, they said his powers of control were put to the test against Brazil when, in the first match he officiated, Brazil scored their first goal against Mexico. As was the custom then, the goal caused a mass invasion by reporters demanding immediate responses from the goal scorer.
And the goal in the middle of the match.
On the middle of the match. I've seen this actually in from recent footage. But the goal would be scored, and everyone runs up with a microphone to him, and with the goalkeeper as well. And that was all very commonplace back then. So
he's not having any of that, though.
So he's he's saying, you know, how could someone once said, how could any one man restore law and order? Well, George Reader did that within a few minutes. He cleared the pitch almost single-handedly and restarted the World Cup curtain raiser as if it were an end-of-season fixture in the Yorkshire League, as the book The Final Whistle puts it.
Oh, brilliant.
Absolutely.
How old was he?
He was 53. Okay. And as a result of all this, a daily newspaper in Sao Paulo said... He just sang the praises of the British referees that were there. And it said... This is the quote. It said, "We must strongly demand that Brazil shall not take the field again in this World Championship if a British referee is not in charge. Even should we finally meet the English, we shall still demand a British referee and have full confidence in him."
Wow.
It's an incredible statement, really.
What a turnaround.
Well, we can't... we've got to mention in that World Cup, because England were humiliated by the US 1-0 and went out in the first round. Yeah. But as for Alcides... Gigia himself, the goal scorer.
Yeah. He made the first and scored the second then.
He did, yeah. He had a part. He went on to play for Roma, actually, and he actually became an Italian citizen and played a handful of games for Italy later on in his career. But it was only last year, right at the end of last year, on the 29th of December, so very recently, Brazil honoured Gigia by celebrating his decisive goal in that 2-1 victory over Brazil in the final match of the 1950 World Cup.
Closure.
Exactly, and he was honoured. His feet were moulded to take place alongside the greats, including Pele, Eusebio, Beckenbauer, which is at the Maracanã Stadium. Walk of Fame. Nugent isn't there.
Still time.
At the Maracanã Stadium Walk of Fame, which I've been to, I have to say, gentlemen.
Impressive?
Very impressive indeed. He's 83. He declined to take questions from reporters, but he did manage a Viva Brazil before leaving. But he said, I'm a bit emotional, and I just want to thank everyone from my heart for the reception I've been given. So it's quite incredible that Brazil are honouring this man who... did, you know...
destroyed them.
Exactly. Yeah. But I shall end with a quote from the goal-scoring Gigi himself. He said, "Only three people have managed to quiet down the Maracanã with a single action. Frank Sinatra, Pope John Paul II, and me."
Excellent.
He becomes that match.
The 1950 World Cup final match is in.
So in the Dean Windass Hall of Fame, this is just going to repeat itself for infinity. All the Brazilian players are going to go mad.
Yeah, they will, yeah.
Let them. They already are. Ladies and gentlemen, that is the end of the show. If you'd like to get in contact with us, then the email address is podcast@thefootballramble.com, and of course the website is thefootballramble.com, which has lots of lovely things, blogs and Ramble Tube, which are clips that we've talked about in the show, and you'll have a great time there. Any notices?
Well, I mean, we still got betway.com/footballramble. Just because it's 2010, 10 past 8, it doesn't mean that sports betting's ended.
Yeah, Jimbo's top of the league, I'm second.
I'm down there. Yeah, so I've gone for a home banker, Fulham, against Portsmouth next week.
Oh, that's out of order.
Oh, come on, Dig. Bobby Zamora's firing all cylinders.
Bobby Z.
So, betway.com/footballramble.
Say goodbye, Pete.
Yeah.
Say goodbye, Luke.
Goodbye.
Say goodbye, James or Jim.
Goodbye.
We're all off for some of Pele's coffee.
I would.
Oh.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.